Chapter 5. Caldera, Lacolith. The city had suffered catastrophic damage. Many of its towers had fallen, others canted, ready to topple or leaned against smaller buildings. A pall of smoke hung over Lacolith. Entire districts had been gutted by flame. Rocket and artillery craters marked the city with the footsteps of monsters. The outer walls had been annihilated. Their traces remained as heaps of rubble dotting Lacolith's perimeter. There was nothing shielding the city from the jungle, and Saurian predators roamed the streets. But the city was more than a shell. Corland was amazed by what he found. There was still a population prepared to fight. The people had not been enslaved or exterminated to the last soul. They emerged as the Imperial forces established their staging ground in the eastern sector of the city. The spaceport was a ruin. The control tower had taken a direct hit from an orbital strike, and where it had stood was the center of a deep crater, which occupied almost a third of the port's area. A small fleet of lighters had been reduced to blackened, twisted corpses. The rockrete landing zone was pitted with shell impacts and strewn with wreckage, but it had also been built to withstand the tectonic violence of the world. It was still a large, open, relatively level area. It would serve. Corland had his command tent set up at the edge of the crater, out of the way of the landers and manoeuvring vehicles. He and Fane met with General Marga Imren of the Lucifer Blacks and Tech Priest Dominus Alquist Arawar. The Lucifer Blacks made up the largest contingent of the Astra Militarum cohort, giving Imren supreme authority over the combined guard regiments. She was visibly uncomfortable in the presence of Arawar. There was little of the Adeptus Mechanicus leader that suggested he was human at all. His body was a collection of multi-jointed limbs and metallic tentacles. His silhouette defied the eye. It recalled an ancient avian, stooped but moving with a floating, scuttling grace of the arachnid. In her dark uniform, Imren had the rigid posture and cold pride earned by the regiment that supplied the Imperial Palace's honor guard. She was the human at its most disciplined. Arawar was the human at its most absent. "The position is barely defensible," Imren said. She was right. Holding off the natural predators of Caldera was a simple matter. An orc attack would be something else again.
"We are not here to defend, Lacolith," Corland said. "This is the point from which we launch our assault, and that will be as soon as we have a target."
"The strategy of the Veridi Giganticus is puzzling," Arawar said. His voice box clicked and whistled with snatches of Binaric. He was poised over the strategium table. It displayed a map of Lacolith, the surrounding region, and what had been recorded of the Greenskins' positions during the landings.
"Their behaviour is anomalous."
"Everything about these orcs is anomalous," said Thane. "That is their norm."
"Agreed. However, many of their non-normative actions are unusual because of their advanced technology, considered strategy, and intelligent responses. Characteristics strange in the Veridi, but logical by any other sentient measure. The ambassador caste contradicts our understanding of the race, but not the conduct of war."
His left arm unfolded. He spread his hand, telescoping its digits until they corresponded approximately to the various orc armies marked on the map.
"Here I observe behavior both anomalous and nonsensical. The Veridi have abandoned Caldera's capital, its pillage incomplete. There are no significant population centers in the directions they are pursuing. There are no targets of strategic worth."
Imram said, "They aren't conquering the planet. They're tearing it apart."
"But they must have had some reason to come down," Corland mused. "The Primarch?" Thane asked. "I refuse to believe they knew about his presence here before we did. And yet, all in all..."
Corland shook his head.
"Even so, that is a leap too far."
Thane did not pursue the point.
"I agree the supposition cannot be supported," Arawar continued. "I would suggest their presence on the surface of Caldera is connected to the use of the planet we have already observed. This is the first time we have seen the construction of an attack moon."
Corland found the speculation unsatisfying.
"Even if Lacolith was a target of opportunity, why abandon it before they were finished with it?"
"Quite,"
Arawa made a fist and spread his fingers, suggesting a purposeless radiation of the orc hordes.
Puzzling, said Imran. Does it help us with our mission?
I don't know, Corlin admitted. I won't discount its significance, though. We should also speak with local survivors.
He met with several of them a few minutes later. They were escorted into the base by a squad of Lucifer Blacks and waited outside the command tent. Their uniforms were almost as ragged as their bodies, patched with strips of leather and reinforced with scrap metal. The insignia of the Lacolith Defense Militia were still visible, two converging spears creating the silhouette of a volcano. One man had carved the lines into his forehead, wearing his pride on his flesh. They were young, but their faces were lined with a sudden age of brutal experience.
I salute you, citizens, Corlin told them. You have resisted well. You are alive, and so is your city.
Thank you, Lord,
the man with the carved forehead said.
How did you drive off the orcs?
We didn't, said a woman. We were saved.
By whom?
The mortals shared a look of religious awe.
We don't know, the first man told Corlin. We only saw him at a distance.
He wore power armor,
Corlin guessed. Blank silence from the mortals. Corlin tapped his chest plate.
Like mine.
They all nodded.
But greater,
the woman said.
He is a giant, taller even than you, Lord, and he cannot die.
More nods, more awed looks. Curious, Corlin asked,
what do you mean?
He fought so many, he should have died. I saw an entire hab fall on him.
A rocket landed where he was standing, the scarred man said.
Every one of them had witnessed these and other moments that would have meant death for any being who fell within these mortals' conception of human.
He never died, the first woman said. We all saw him die, and we were always wrong. He always returned. Never close to where we thought he died, always somewhere else. In the end, he drew the greenskins away from us.
They didn't care about Lacolith anymore, said the scarred man. They went after him, their entire army.
Corland pictured Arawa's hand gesture over the map. The illogical pattern now made sense. He thanked the group. They left to continue rebuilding Lacolith's defences. And if we find the Primarch, Corland thought, and we depart with him, what happens to these people? He knew the answer. There would be no one guarding Lacolith. All of its walls had fallen, and as the Orc sent more and more of the planet's crust into orbit to join the attack moon, the point could very well come that volatile caldera tore itself apart. He turned around. Thane was a few steps away, his face mirrored Corland's thoughts.
We're fighting to save the Imperium, Corland said.
I know. I have to wonder when the sacrifices will be enough.
They are all too great.
The Finality's starboard broadside took out the midsection of the Orc cruiser as it turned to make a ramming charge at the Absolute Decree. Admiral Zdenek Rodolf savored the moment. He saw the greenskin vessel's own ammunition reserves trigger still larger explosions. The upper portion of the hull blew outwards. The ship continued on its trajectory, bleeding flame and wreckage, its shape distorted as if being devoured by a greater beast.
Come on, damn you,
Rodolf muttered.
You'll know you've been killed. Die.
The engines had been ruptured by the spreading catastrophe. They erupted now, swallowing the rest of the ship with light of their destruction. Rodolf grinned. And then the proximity alert toxins wailed.
Captain Groth yelled,
Portside! Brace!
All too late. An orc frigate in full disintegration slammed into the side of the Finality's command structure. The impact hurled Rodolf over the command pulpit. He bounced off a workstation. His right arm snapped, and he landed on the deck with his limb twisted at the elbow and folded beneath his body. Slabs of plasteel from the bridge's vault plunged to the deck, crushing equipment and officers. Power flickered, then surged. Electrical fires started in the smashed stations.
Admiral!
Groth called. She helped Rodolf to his feet. His breath hissed through clamped teeth as his arm swung loose.
Get me back up!
he said. He coughed, breathing smoke and pain. Groth led him back up the stairs to the pulpit. As she did, the Auspex's master warned of more vessels incoming.
"Bring us above the decree," Groth ordered. "We'll shield each other."
The edges of Rodolph's vision grayed. The rhythm of the Grand Cruiser's barrage was muffled. He tasted blood in his mouth. This was more than a broken arm. Someone was giving a damage report, but he couldn't make out the words.
"Are we..."
he started to say.
"Still in the fight, Admiral," said Groth.
Rodolph leaned against the pulpit. He gripped the Aquila's wing with his left hand.
"Get me Brumis,"
he said. The feel of the iron in his hand grounded him. His head spun, but he could think. A moment later, the captain of the Absolute Decree was on the vox.
"Our position is untenable, Admiral," Brumis said. "The orcs are..."
An explosion drowned his words. Rodolph could guess the rest of the captain's sentence.
"Agreed. We've done our duty here. The forces have made planetfall."
"You can't be calling a retreat," said Groth.
"No. An attack. Set course for the Orc moon."
Brumis was silent for a moment.
Admiral,
he began.
"I understand the consequence of my order, Captain."
"Understood."
Rodolph exchanged a look with Groth. She nodded and relayed the command. On the Oculus, a swarm of Orc frigates closed in.
"And if the forces on the planet find the Primarch," Groth said, "how will they leave?"
"If the fleet is destroyed in this location, they are no better off. We have to try to change the conditions of the war. At the very least, we'll keep the Orc fleet occupied."
More Orc torpedoes shot through the defensive fire. The void shields held, but the kinetic energy of the hits still translated through them into a shudder that rocked the finality. Rodolph winced and kept his feet. He clutched the Aquila hard enough to cut his palm. His blood ran down the wing.
"Let me speak to the Alcazar,"
he said. His vision was blurring again.
"Someone get me some stims,"
he shouted. He would not go dark before the ship. He would not. He would... He blinked, and Wayland Kale was on the vox. Rodolph shook his head, trying to clear it. A junior officer arrived with stims. Rodolph downed them. His vision sharpened, but so did his awareness of troubling movement in his chest. He swallowed back another taste of blood, then told Kale what he had ordered.
"The Alcazar remembered is not under my authority, shipmaster," he said, "but I hope you see where necessity lies."
"You want us to pull out of formation and remain on station?"
"Yes. I believe most or all of the Greenskin fleet will follow us in defense of the moon."
"I do understand," said Kale, though his reluctance was clear. "The success of the mission is paramount."
The approaching Orc frigates were joined by more. The finality and the absolute decree led the Imperial fleet towards a wall of ships.
"It is," said Rodolph. "You have our thanks."
"We will add our fire to yours for as long as the conflict is in range."
"My hope is that that will not be for long."
The fleet moved towards the jaws of the enemy, leaving the strength of the Alcazar remembered behind. Early afternoon. The Storm Eagle, Deathblow, streaked over the Calderon landscape. Hemisphere flew just below the cloud cover. Courland sat in the dorsal heavy bolter turret in place of a servitor. Below him was the jungle, its canopy torn by the huge wounds of the Orc's passage. He wished for more altitude and the ability to see more territory at a glance, but the clouds pressed down, weighed by ash and smoke. Any higher, and he would see nothing at all. A short while ago, in the command tent, Courland had said,
"They're searching for their enemy. We have to find him before they do." "How will we do that?"
Hemisphere had asked.
"That's the question. Let's observe what we can of separate Orc forces. I hope we'll know what we're looking for when we see it. I hope you'll forgive me, Chapter Master, but the thread of hope is a thin one." "It's all we have. The anomaly is promising, though, and consistent with reports of the surviving militia. So, take us to the Orcs' hemisphere. We'll begin with a lateral cut across the columns as we find them. I'll let you know if any warrant a second pass. So ordered.
Now Hemisphere flew in an outward arc across the westernmost Orc position. The greenskins were not hard to find. The swathe cut through the jungle by each horde was massive, and the force itself was visible from a great distance. First, there was dirty smoke on the horizon, and then the shapes came into view. The silhouette of a walker, then the lower hulks of battle fortresses, then the smaller tanks and trucks, and around the vehicles the riot of the infantry. Hemisphere skirted the eastern edge of the horde. Its movement was confused. The path of destruction leading to this location followed a straight line, but now the march seemed to have stalled.
They don't know where they're going, Hemisphere said.
No, they don't. The Orcs were milling about, direction lost. There was what looked like the beginnings of a shift to the northeast, but some of the army was still trying to push west. The overflight of the Deathblow renewed the Orcs' purpose. The gunship was outside the range of the infantry's weapons, but they fired anyway. It was within the reach of the anti-aircraft guns. Solid ordnance and energy beams struck at it.
They're no use to us, Corlin said. Take us to the next.
Hemisphere angled the Storm Eagle away, pushing the thrusters. The gunship left the Orcs behind long before the guns could take its measure. Corlin thought about the confusion he had seen and what the militia soldiers had told him about Vulcan's appearance in Lacolith.
The Primarch was here, he said, but no longer. They've lost their quarry. We should watch then for similar patterns of behaviour with the other cohorts, said Hemisphere. Yes, as soon as you see that symptom, move on. No point in giving them a target. And we don't know how much time we have. These armies won't remain separate for long.
Hemisphere flew east, angling towards the north as he picked up another swathe. The Orcs he and Corlin found were as confused as the first army. The gunship flashed over them, not slowing. The brief glance, all Corlin needed. These Orcs reacted quickly. Some of the surface-to-air fire came very close.
They were expecting us, Hemisphere said.
Yes, said Corlin.
They're communicating well. More of that damned coordination they've developed.
They flew past two more armies. More confusion, more chaotic pulling in two directions. Corlin saw a new pattern. The tension in the hordes was always between whatever route they had been following initially and the northeast.
They're receiving reports they don't know whether to believe, he said. The evidence of their senses conflicts with the communications from the other groups. If this is Lord Vulcan's doing, said Hemisphere, the strategy is brilliant. He single-handedly divided the greenskins into multiple smaller groups that have no idea where they're going. I wish we knew how he was doing this.
By being true to his myth? Corlin muttered.
I missed that, Chapter Master.
Nothing, brother. I wish I knew too. But I think we know where we're heading now.
We do.
The Deathblow flew northeast. Ahead, the jungle thinned as the land rose. The land, fertilized by frequent falls of volcanic ash, gave way to the barrenness of hardened lava flows. Further north, Corlin saw two massive cones with smoke pouring from their peaks, lit by lightning and the angry red of molten rock. The next force of Orcs were between the gunship's position and the two volcanoes, still in the jungle and striking directly towards the peaks. This was the largest horde so far. More warbands were arriving at the rear, perhaps groups that had broken off early from the other mobs. The movement here was assured and violent. Corlin saw a bright flash towards the head of the advance.
Brother Hemisphere, he said. I saw it, Chapter Master. They're fighting something.
Hemisphere turned the Storm Eagle towards the north and flew straight into a massive anti-aircraft barrage. The Orcs had been waiting for them, charging forwards to attack their unseen target, racing ahead with the single-minded ferocity and speed of their race. They had still prepared for the Deathblow's appearance. Hemisphere threw the gunship into evasive turns and rolls. Corland raked the ground below with the turret's heavy bolters, and energy bolts lashed the grey late afternoon. A lightning storm reached up from the ground to surround the Storm Eagle. The orcs had assembled a battery of energy cannons, and they had waited until Hemisphere had flown within the ring of cannons before opening fire. Hemisphere vectored the thrusters downwards. The engines shrieked with strain as the gunship shot up and banked south. A crackling beam punched a hole through the center of the port wing, and the engine stuttered. Speed bled away, and the gunship dropped. Hemisphere released the wing-mounted Stormstrike missiles before the orc fire could blow them up. The gunship spiraled downwards. Kulan saw the ragged jungle canopy rush towards them, spitting ordnance. His bolt of fire felt like nothing more than symbolic defiance. Hemisphere regained control of the death blow. The gunship leveled off and skimmed just above the trees, brushing them. A gale of leaves and broken branches surrounded it. The orcs lowered their fire, but the ship had dropped faster than they could adjust their aim. Hemisphere stayed low, strafing the ground ahead with a twin-linked assault cannon. Corland turned his guns the same way. They unleashed an annihilating barrage ahead of them. At this speed, at this proximity, the land and the orc army were a blur. There was no chance to aim. Corland had a brief glimpse of artillery guns ahead, and then they blew up. The death blow streaked into a wall of burning plasma. Then they were through the anti-aircraft ring. Hemisphere angled the ship up again, putting distance between it and the orcs. Energy beams arced after them. A rocket screamed by the turret canopy and exploded just off the port wing. The blast wave buffeted the Storm Eagle. The engine stalled again, but Hemisphere kept control of the flight. He dipped the nose, sacrificing altitude for speed, then angled hard to port, and the orc fire went off to the side.
"I'm satisfied we've found our target," Hemisphere said. "So am I."
These orcs were not marching or searching. They were at war. They had an enemy. Corland opened a vox channel to Thane.
"We have our target. I'm sending you the coordinates. Begin the mobilization now."
The Imperial advance was rapid. The orcs had paved the way, destroying the jungle as they advanced, flattening all obstacles. Adeptus Astartes, Astra Militarum, and Mechanicus contingents moved north on the trail the enemy had left. In less than 2 hours, the smoke of their vehicles was in sight. Even so, Corland wished for more speed. He had no proof Vulcan was battling the front lines of the Greenskin Column, and if the Primarch was there, how long could the struggle continue? He forced the questions aside, placing them with his doubts. There was a clear path of action open to him, so he took it. Since the disaster of Adamantua, he had been faced with one hard decision after another. Each time the choice had been clear, each time the outcome uncertain. They all still were, but now there was the immediacy of the mission and the fury of an assault. And for the first time since Adamantua, he had the prospect of seeing the orcs bleed. Corland rode with a squad of the last wall in one of the rhinos the Fist's exemplar had turned over for the company's use. The transport was in the front line of the advance. He sat in the top hatch, watching the jungle ahead, tracking the progress of the combined effort of the Adeptus Astartes, the Astra Militarum, and the Mechanicus. He was closing on the orcs with the power to topple worlds. He kept the assault force in a tight fist. He assumed the orcs knew the attack was coming, so planned to render their information useless with a massive, overwhelming blow. The army advanced at the speed of its infantry. Gunships flew overwatch. Tanks held their fire until the last minute. Hemisphere took the death blow up again, maintaining a cautious distance until Corland ordered the attack.
"What can you see?" Corland asked him. "The rear guard is still moving forwards. The horde's direction is unchanged from earlier." "They aren't turning to fight us?" "It seems not. Either they aren't aware of our approach or they don't care."
"Then it's time they did." Still, he waited until he caught his first sight of the rearmost orcs. He could not hear their snarls over the clanking roar of the Imperial transports and tanks, but he saw the ferocity in their movements. They were rushing to fight an enemy thousands of meters ahead of them, ignoring the one approaching from behind. Corland switched to the combat network.
"Now!"
he said. A new volcano erupted in the Calderon jungle. Its eruption was focused. Its devastation was controlled. It was a thing of metal and ceramite, of promethium and particle beams. It was flesh and machine. It was the fury of the Imperium, come to punish the Xenos. The artillery barrage reached ahead of the rearguard. Predators, whirlwinds, dune crawlers, basilisks and wyverns fired at once. Beams, mortars, rockets and shells struck the targeted region, and a second Imperial volcano erupted in answer to the first. The middle distance turned into a firestorm that rose to the clouds. Silhouetted fragments of orc bodies and vehicles tumbled through the flames. The thunder of the salvo was like the planet itself, cracking in two. As the tanks and artillery vehicles continued the bombardment, the infantry charged the rear of the orc column. Fist Exemplar and the Last Wall poured out of rhinos and land raiders. Behind them came the Skitarii and the Guard. Assault squads rode jump packs ahead of the main charge and came down in the midst of orcs between the walking barrage and the battering ram of the infantry. "I am Slaughter," Corrant thought. His wall name had been stolen from him by that terrible voice over Adamantua. Now he reclaimed it. He struck the orcs with a wall of battle brothers and a hurricane wind of mass reactive shells. He had brought annihilation to the enemy. He had brought vengeance.
"I am Slaughter!"
he shouted, his bolter on full burst, and he saw a measure of justice for his murdered brothers in the butchery he unleashed. The Imperial advance was fast, but measured, disciplined. Las, shells, electrical arcs and plasma bolts hit the orcs in an unbroken wave. The assault squads spread ripples of ruin and confusion. Hundreds of meters of the enemy column collapsed into anarchy. Wherever the orcs turned, they were cut down. They fought back, but there was no coherence to their response. There was order only in the manner of their deaths. The infantry charged in conflicting directions. Trucks and war bikes were caught in the crush, unable to maneuver, their wheels spinning over the bodies of the fallen, until rockets and grenades turned them into flaming coffins. Further on, the massive shapes of two vast walkers bulked against the sky, higher than the flames. Gunships attacked them in squadrons. Flying through the anti-aircraft fire, the Imperial flights strafed the walkers with las cannons and heavy bolters. The walkers lumbered to retaliate. They brought their heavy weapons to bear on departing aircraft, only to be hit from another flank by the next squadron. As the gunships passed the walkers, they looped back to launch missiles at the orc tanks. Courland felt the momentum of the campaign. It was a beast upon the land, tearing into its prey. It was also a mechanism of violence, crushing the enemy with implacable precision. Three branches of the Imperium's might fought as one, their collective forming the sinews of the beast, the gears of the machine. This was the unity so absent in the Great Chamber. The competing agendas that had led to the madness on Mars were gone. The corrupt self-interest of the High Lords and the divisions they fostered threatened the Imperium as much as the Orcs, but here, now, the servants of the Emperor did their duty. In this moment, the fall of the Greenskins seemed inevitable, no matter how far they evolved or how advanced their technology. The stench of the war reached Corlan through his helmet grill, the humid mix of rotting vegetation, burnt physoline, and spilled blood. In the distance, barely audible over the clamour of the battle, the Saurian carnivores of Caldera snarled their fury. They were displaced. Predators far worse than they were at war. A battle wagon reared over the bodies of infantry. Smashing the living and the dead beneath its wheels and treads, it thundered towards the front line of the last wall. Courland and Daylight ran at it, splitting left and right. Its gunner swung the cannon after Courland. The shell exploded behind him, and then he was too close. Orcs leaned out of hatches, hammering his armour with shots. He turned towards the vehicle's front at the last second, leaping up to grab the top of its siege shield. He clung with one hand and threw a frag grenade through the driver's slit in the armour. On the right, Daylight slapped a crack to the side. The slit spat flame, and the battle wagon veered wildly. Courland jumped away from the shield as the crack grenade went off, melting through the rear treads and the hull. The vehicle's fuel ignited, and the blossom of fire lifted the back of the wagon as it slewed. It rolled, crushing the orcs in its turrets. It became a tumbling mass of shredding metal and flame, killing the orcs still in its path. The last wall parted to let it pass. On the flanks, the Sidonian dragoons moved up, racing forwards on their iron striders. The legs of their bipedal steeds were long enough that they could have stepped effortlessly over the heads of the enemy. Instead, they smashed greenskins down with each stride. The dragoons held their taser lances pointed low. With the iron striders moving at full gallop, the lances stitched lines of chained incinerations. And the rifle fire was unstinting. There was no standing against the Imperial storm. The countercharges were brief and shattered before they could begin. There was only one direction the orcs could go. They took it. They fled.
"The enemy is in retreat!" Courland shouted. "Drive it into the ground!"
The Imperial machine pursued. The speed of the orcs surprised Courland, even allowing for the gap in their ranks created by the artillery. They had seemed too densely packed.
"Hemisphere," he voxed. "Tell me what you see."
It took a moment for the pilot to answer. Courland heard him grunt and a background burst of energy. Further ahead, the orcs were still lashing at the aircraft.
"There's a gap between the bulk of the horde and the struggle involving the front lines. I couldn't see it before. I think they only slowed down when we began the assault, but they're catching up quickly now."
Unease gnawed at the edge of triumph, but the odd greenskin strategy changed nothing. Courland led the pursuit without pause, chewing up the rear ranks of the enemy, the cannons pounding the centre of the horde. The jungle thinned, then ended. The ground became rockier. The terrain sloped upwards, turning into craggy foothills in advance of the two volcanoes. The horde retreated even faster. The mounted mass abandoned the slower infantry. The orcs fought to climb aboard the trucks and the tops of battle wagons. Bikes and overloaded vehicles roared up the slope. The gap between the two armies widened. Unease became alarm.
"Stop their flight," Courland ordered. "Land speeders to the fore. Dominus Adoa, we need your fastest troops."
And Hemisphere was shouting in his ear,
"They're not retreating. They have camouflaged positions. They..."
A new thunder of cannons drowned Hemisphere out. The orcs' heavy tanks burst from their concealment. The walkers, damaged but still fighting, turned away from the harassing aircraft and aimed their massive guns downhill. From the heights, they dropped the sky down on the Imperial forces. Courland heard the shriek of high-explosive shells, and then he was in the air, lifted off his feet as the ground hurtled skywards. His battle brothers and the rest of the strike force vanished in the flare of crimson and coruscating green. He landed on his back, cracking stone. He rolled and surged to his feet.
"Force them back," he voxed. "Artillery, take out the tanks. Our cannons outnumber theirs."
Through the smoke and blasts, he saw the last wall and the Fist's exemplar climbing with him. The formation was ragged, but the fire still constant. And the orc infantry had stopped retreating. It was digging in, returning the Imperial salvos with a vengeance.
"Keep advancing," he heard Thane order the Fist's exemplar. "Keep the initiative."
Wreckage everywhere. Iron striders twisted and smoking. Mortals turned into meat, their uniforms so burned and soaked in blood there was no identifying their regiment. Through the dead and through the meteor storm of the orc barrage, the Imperial forces advanced. Keep the initiative. We never had it, Courland thought. The shadow of Ardamantua fell on him. Though he marched up the slope, though he weathered the shots scorching and pitting his armour, though he led an attack that was still disciplined, still coherent, still powerful, he felt the sickening knowledge of imminent disaster. It was Hemisphere who first saw what was coming. It was his voice that became the messenger of doom.
"Chapter Master, major orc forces closing from the east and west."
Uphill, the orc cannons paused for a moment. Wind cleared the smoke, and Curran could see the scale of the counterattack. No, not a counterattack. A trap. To the left and to the right, armies fully as large as the one to the north closed in. An ocean of savagery came to drown the Imperial machine.